You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 102.7 FM.
So just to give a brief bit of historical background to this, for more than 7 years, Canada has been engaged in armed conflict in Afghanistan. There are approximately 2,500 Canadian troops that are stationed in Afghanistan and deployed there, and these are largely in the southern province of Kandahar. Now, as part of that operation, Canadian soldiers are under standing orders to detain individuals. Once individuals are arrested, the detainees are transported by Canadian forces to a facility under Canadian control. And at that facility, each person is assessed, makes a decision to either continue to detain those individuals, makes a decision that an individual should be released, or makes a decision that the individual should be transferred over to Afghan authorities. And these arrangements are the results of agreements the Canadian government entered into with the Afghanistan government. The first one of these agreements was signed on December 18th, 2005, and it established that Afghanistan would accept detainees from Canadian forces, and once they accepted those individuals, would not subject any of those individuals to the death penalty. And then there's a second agreement, kind of a supplementary agreement that was signed a couple of years later on May 3rd, 2007. And under that agreement, Afghanistan agreed to give Canada certain monitoring privileges and give Canadian officials access to detainees that were in Canadian facilities. Now, I mentioned that our organizations had strong grounds when we filed the lawsuit for our understanding that torture and abuse was rampant in Afghan custody. And in fact, since we have filed our lawsuit, it's beyond doubt. The UN Secretary General, the UN High Commissioner for Human Rights, the United States State Department, and also the Afghan Independent Human Rights Commission have all maintained that individuals are routinely tortured in Afghan jails. And these bodies have described the torture committed by Afghan authorities as common and routine. Canada's own Department of Foreign Affairs and International Trade prepares annual reviews and of the human rights situation in Afghanistan. And in 2007, our own department concluded extrajudicial executions, disappearances, torture, and detention without trial are all too common. Despite this well-documented abuse that's occurring in Afghan jails, it wasn't until Canada entered into the second agreement that I mentioned, the one that was in 2007, that the Canadian government began to monitor or verify some of the reports that international organizations had been making public. So now the success of our case really hangs on the court's determination of whether the charter applies to Canadian troops on foreign soil and whether the charter applies in this instance to non-Canadians. Now, a number of courts, U.S. courts, the European Court of Human Rights, British courts, have ruled that prisoners that are captured by their troops are covered by constitutional protections. All these courts have concurred that when a military has de facto control of war detainees, those detainees are entitled to certain protections of the Detaining Powers Human Rights Law. Now, our case, though, the case that the BCCLA and Amnesty International filed, is the first case to ask Canadian courts to adopt the same principle. And so far, the Canadian courts have ruled against us. We believe that in doing so, they're leaving Canada badly out of step with the rest of the world and with our allies. Our first loss was at the federal court, where the federal court ruled that the Charter of Rights does not protect Afghan detainees from being transferred into the custody of those who would torture them. And the Federal Court of Appeal agreed with that court and upheld the lower court's decision. So these rulings have really set the stage for our case. They've set the stage for what's definitely a landmark case to be heard by the Supreme Court of Canada. We just recently sought leave to appeal to the Supreme Court of Canada, and we expect the court to decide very shortly whether or not it will hear the case. In a decade when the war on terror has obliged British courts, even the United States Supreme Court, to uphold the rights of war detainees, this case is the first appeal to the Canadian courts to do likewise. And we're really urging the courts to recognize that human rights are at a great risk at times of war. So our fight on this case is going to continue. But already I think you can see this as really a textbook example of what impact litigation can accomplish. Until we filed our lawsuit, Canada was denying that torture was rampant in Afghan prisons. And it was as late as last February that our Minister of Defense was trying to assure the public that torture was not occurring at all in Afghan jails. Now, based on our lawsuit, there is absolutely overwhelming evidence that torture is widespread in Afghan custody. And in fact, it's our case that has forced the release of volumes of government documents. And these documents have shown that once Canadian officials began monitoring the conditions in the Afghan jails, several detainees gave firsthand credible evidence of the torture that they experienced. In one instance, Canadian officials even found the actual implements of torture. Secondly, the lawsuit has changed the government's policy on the transfer of detainees. Immediately before an initial hearing in this case, and by immediately, I believe it was in 24 hours of the hearing of the case, Canada had announced that, in fact, it had secretly stopped transferring detainees and had stopped transferring detainees about 4 months. We really believe that this was as a result of our lawsuit and the really credible allegations that we were making about the abuse that was occurring. Shortly after a preliminary hearing in this matter, Canada announced that second transfer agreement that I mentioned, the agreement that was entered into in 2007. And that agreement had certain improved conditions in it because it provided for monitoring of the Afghan jails. So while we certainly don't see that second agreement as providing all the protections that need to be provided, we definitely see that as a better agreement than the first agreement. And also, I think, largely due to this, to our case. Based on our complaint, we also filed, based on our lawsuit, we kind of filed a parallel complaint with the Military Police Complaints Commissioner. And our complaint has inspired the Military Police Complaints Commissioner to launch full-scale public interest hearings into the conduct of the Canadian forces in Afghanistan. And these are their first full-scale hearings that this commission has decided to conduct since the Somalia affair. And we expect that those hearings will be beginning within the next couple of months. And then just finally, I think the case has brought national attention to an issue that for some time was really flying under the radar. And it obliged the government to come forward and at a minimum to justify its policy. So I'll just end by noting that while our case proceeds, the individuals that are at the heart of this litigation are still very much in danger. The Canadian forces continue to transfer individuals into the hands of Afghan authorities, despite all the overwhelming evidence that detainees have been subjected to torture. And we really see our case as being a profound test of Canada's commitment to fundamental human rights.